This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Hi, this is John Pesutto, Victoria's opposition leader. You're listening to Saturday Magazine on Joy 94.9.
And you're here with Macca and Janet, and we're about to talk to Josh Burns, Federal Labor Minister.
Member.
I've given you a promotion,
put
Josh.
Put the Moz on me, Janet.
Here on Saturday, 13th of April, Sat Magazine, beautiful day.
How are you?
Welcome.
It is a beautiful day.
It's a beautiful day.
Yeah, it's great to be back in the studio. I just went to the gym just around down the street on Fitzroy Street, had a shower, you'll be glad to know, and now I'm in the studio.
Fantastic. Yeah.
We like would have been a bit grim otherwise.
Well, you know, we like you clean and with a clear head. A couple of things I wanted to talk about, Josh.
Yep.
And I'm not sure, you might be able to explain this to me.
Yep.
The Prime Minister has talked about some federal aid or assistance in the budget for key industries, you know, particularly growth industries, clean energy, batteries, critical minerals.
Yep. What is this all about?
Yeah, what's it about? It's not Tri-Continental Mark II, is it?
No, it's actually a really simple concept that if you think about where are the jobs of the future, they're in manufacturing things like solar panels. You know, we have all of the materials to make solar panels in Australia, but we actually dig it up, sell it to China, and China adds all of the value, all of the money that you can make around the labor, the design, the manufacturing, all of that happens overseas. And then we buy the products back at a hugely inflated price. And what the Prime Minister is saying is, well, actually, we should be making this stuff here in Australia. The United States, under the Biden administration, passed something called the Inflation Reduction Act, which was it had many different facets to it. But one of the things it tried to do was to say, if you're going to make things in America, we're going to incentivize that. Mm. And we're going to make it really attractive for businesses to manufacture and make things in America. It drives innovation. So what we're saying in Australia is actually, hang on, we've got so many opportunities. We've got all of the minerals here. We've got all of the things that will meet the emission reduction targets of the future. Why don't we actually make it here as well? And if we want to get to our emission reduction targets and we want to create jobs in the future, well, this is the sort of thing we need to be doing.
So I assume, and correct me if I'm wrong, that potentially this...
You're never wrong, Macca.
Oh, okay. Hang on. Make sure we record that.
You heard it here first.
Yeah, you heard it here first.
He paid me $50 to say that, everyone.
Yeah, I know. I know.
Oh, I'd take more money. It's not $50 isn't enough.
God, $50, you're cheap.
Yeah.
I assume that this would potentially involve some subsidy or support.
Yeah.
I'd like to encourage that when the government is thinking about this, to actually consider adding another stream to that, which is that if a company wants to do this, their ability to write off the investment quickly, provided it has a certain percentage of local content being labour and materials. And this has been done before in a couple of areas many years ago. It actually enables the company in that financial year or that tax year to be able to write off the investment. So whilst it is potentially a cost to the government, it's not the same as actually giving money. So I'd encourage to think about both ways of doing that.
There's definitely a procurement component here as well. And I mean, I actually think Dan Andrews, the model that he used to roll out when we were talking about how, you know, a lot of the trains that we built for our train lines, the trams, the local components of some of our big government projects were built into the contract. So you've got to employ X many people. The supply chains have to be X many local people, all of that sort of thing. This idea, though, and the Treasurer will announce some of the details of how some of the financial instruments are going to work in the budget. But essentially, what we want to do is obviously encourage the procurement of local jobs and the local businesses. But we also want to say, well, when we're thinking about the industries that aren't actually in existence right now and the industries that aren't happening in Australia right now, we don't really manufacture solar panels in Australia, not at a really large scale, yet we invented solar panels at the University of New South Wales. Mm. So So there is a disconnect here. And what the Prime Minister is saying is, well, we're going to need a lot of solar panels. We should be making that sort of thing here. We have all of the raw components. So let's make them here in Australia. And I think that there is going to be a suite of policies, as well as what Ed Husic's working on, which is the National Reconstruction Fund, which is all about directly investing in new manufacturing and new manufacturing jobs and the jobs of the future in clean energy. And let me make this point, because I think this is going to be really important to the people who listen to Joy, is that the industries and the jobs that we want to take have two purposes. One is obviously to create local jobs. We want people in Australia working in good quality, advanced jobs. But it's also to meet our emission reduction targets.
Yep.
This is about climate change. And if we're going to tackle climate change, we have to not just think about it in terms of a scientific problem, which it fundamentally is, but this is an industrial and economic issue as well. In fact, it's an industrial and economic opportunity that we need to take advantage of. So that's what this is all about. And I think it's from the people I've been meeting with in the sector who in the climate, environment and job sector, this is exactly what people have been asking for.
I think the big challenge, Josh, is a significant amount of investment. It's very tech heavy and it can also be very labour intensive. And you've got to then, it's clear there's a market for a lot of the things that the government wants to encourage. The problem is that so many of the industries that are utilising that have long-term contracts. So it's actually going to be hard to get the product that you make into the market in the quantity that you would need it for it to be. So it's going to need some form of preference. You know, we know in tenders sometimes, you know, there's an advantage for Australian made, or, you know, in a council tender even, you know, for local, something that's produced in that area. So I think that has to be a component as well, because we're up against, you know, China, that are producing, last time I looked, about 83% of the world's solar panels.
Yeah, they are.
You know, that's pretty hard market to crack into.
Yeah, but you also look at what's happening in Singapore right now. They're desperate to buy Australian renewable energy exported from the mainland. There's a project being developed by a company called SunCable, which is based out of Darwin, and their whole agenda is to try and have Darwin as a renewable energy hotspot, while also having a cable from Darwin to Singapore to export, you know, gigawatts of renewable energy on a daily basis to Singapore. So this is you know, our region has a huge potential for the transition towards renewable energy. And if we are just digging stuff up and shipping it out, then all of the value, all of the manufacturing value that we could be enjoying here in Australia, all of the jobs will be sent overseas. And I think that's a missed opportunity.
Can I ask, because I know Janet's gagging to ask a question in a moment, but talking about climate change and emission reduction.
Yeah.
The government's new vehicle emissions scheme, which I supported, those ambitious targets. Why did they cut them? Why did they decide that all these manufacturers that suddenly discovered, oh, there's going to be an emission standard in Australia, the rest of the world, other than Russia, pretty much has the same standard, we can't meet it. So why did the government back down?
Well, I wouldn't categorise it like that. I would.
And that's not just because he's a politician.
No. I mean, we don't have emission reduction targets at the moment, right?
No.
We don't have them. So anything that we put in would be a huge step forward in ensuring that we have emission, we have fuel efficiency standards, and we have standards going into the sorts of vehicles that we're accepting in Australia. Because right now in Australia, we've got nothing. Car companies can basically send whatever vehicle they want to us. And the only other country, as you mentioned, Macca, that has that arrangement is Russia. So we need to obviously move with this. We saw that the coalition were able to engage in their typically considered and calm and rational way by saying that this is a ute tax and by saying that this is going to end the weekend. So, you know, obviously we're dealing with a sensible group of people who aren't losing their brain over this. But that was sarcastic for anyone who couldn't pick up my dryness on
they
that.
They speak very highly of you.
Yes, they do. They're big fans. But this is about you know, we were always going to go through a process of engaging with the manufacturers. We want it to be possible. Toyota were quite aggressive in the way in which they were opposing this, and obviously
Tesla. Well, of course there are, because they're one of the biggest polluters.
Yeah, and they're the one that they wanted to have their cars that they could, you know, that they don't have to spend new R&D on, and they don't have to spend new development on, just to go to Australia, in which we said, no, you're gonna have to change. So there is going to be over time an increase in the fuel efficiency standards that are required in Australia, and that's a really important reform.
We have, and we have had, and we still have some of the dirtiest fuel in the world.
Yeah.
Right? And I can think back over the last 20 years, all the discussions, both when I worked in the industry, I haven't worked in the industry for 5 years, but discussions with the opposition at the time and the government about, you know, reducing the sulfur content in our fuel.
Yeah.
Didn't happen.
No.
Right? And this whole thing about emission reduction, the factor that is really that perhaps the government doesn't want to talk about and the opposition doesn't want to talk about is the tax incentives that go in salary sacrificing people to purchase vehicles, right? And look at dual cab utes. I know it's not something you stand on the side of the road with lust in your eyes thinking, Josh, but...
How dare you, Mecca?
Okay. But dual cab utes, right?
Yeah.
In a salary sacrifice situation, have a huge benefit in terms of being exempt from FBT and, you know, investment allowance and stuff. So on one hand, the government is saying, we want these vehicles to be cleaner, but we're actually going to give you a tax. And it's not just Labor government, it's previous governments. We want to give a tax, we're giving you a tax incentive to buy these vehicles. I mean...
Yeah, but they're not the only vehicles that are being used. I know that the utes and vans are a big form of subsidised fleet-based vehicles, but you know, we want to see...
It's the top-selling vehicle in Australia.
Yeah, but there are also a whole range of other vehicles, including the ordinary sedans, which we want to make a whole range of them electric, so that they can then go into, especially the government used ones. Government's one of the largest procurers of vehicles. We want to make them all electric, so that there is more of a secondhand electric vehicle market. Because we know, Macca, that the biggest barrier towards electric vehicles is cost.
Yeah. We're going to take a break, and I'll when we come back, we're keen to talk about some other things that have been going on in the news. Certainly, Israel and Gaza. We want to come to that, and Penny Wong's speech and what your position is and what the government's position is, because I'd like it clarified. I'm not sure exactly where this is sitting.
Sure.
So you are on Saturday Magazine with Janet Jukes and Macca. Please message us. Let us know what you think, which you are. On air at joy.org.au or 0427569949. And if you're polite and nice to Janet, she'll read it out.
This is Ave Puglielli from the Victorian Greens. You are listening to Saturday Magazine on Joy 94.9.
There you go, you see. Josh Burns, Federal Member for McNamara, and myself, Macca, and my co-host, Janet Jukes. And you never know, Paul might well butt in. He sometimes has a question. Josh, Senator Wong, the Foreign Affairs Minister, in the last week made a speech where she spoke about, if I'll paraphrase this, that a two-state solution for Israel and Gaza. Now, I'd like you to tell me, am I correct in that's what Penny was talking about, and how that sits both with federal ALP policy, and how you see this, what you think should be happening?
Sure. I think the first thing to say, Macca, is that this conflict has been devastating for people, and I acknowledge that there has been real suffering on behalf of the Palestinian people, and I also know and I saw firsthand the destruction that happened on October 7 last year of the terrorist attack inside Israel. It's been the latest chapter in a devastating conflict. And so to answer your question of what is the two-state solution, it's an idea that's been around for decades that is a bipartisan position in Australia that says that the way out of this conflict in the long term is to have two states for two people living side by side in peace and in security and in dignity. that is my position. It has been my position for as long as I've engaged on this issue. I think it is in Israel's long-term interest for there to be a viable Palestinian state. So that's the first thing to say. The second thing to say is that the Middle East is a complicated place. Statecraft is a complicated business. And so as soon as you get into the pathway of how do you create a state, how do you recognize a state, how do you do so in a sustainable and meaningful way, well, it starts becoming very complicated very quickly. And let's try and go through what I think is some of the hurdles to that. The first one is that there is still an immediate conflict going on. There are still over 130 hostages that are unaccounted for. Secretary of State Blinken did a press conference in the last 48 hours where he spoke about how Hamas has rejected the latest round of ceasefire that has been helped negotiated by Egypt and Qatar and other Arab nations. Hamas is unsure of how many of the hostages are still alive. It's a pretty grim picture. There are also, there are also huge percentages of Palestinian people who are displaced from their homes, as there are hundreds of thousands of Israelis who are displaced from their homes. All of this led to the foreign minister say something I think was really important, that Hamas can have no role in the future governance of Gaza. So that is the picture that confronts Israel and the Palestinian people right now. I think that is the first big hurdle that has to be overcome so that there is some form of peace agreement or some form of humanitarian ceasefire agreement or whatever you want to call it, but some sort of arrangement where there is the hostages returned, there is enough aid and support and time and medicine to give the civilians of Gaza all of the support that they need, and then the world can take a step towards, well, what comes next? How do you recognize or how do you acknowledge that there needs to be an administration in Gaza following Hamas and after Hamas? That is a difficult picture. I don't have all of the answers on that, but I do think that two things can be true. One is that the long-term way through this for both people is to have two viable states. But it's also true to say that there are short-term huge problems that need to be overcome. And in the last 20-odd minutes, Macca, and this is something that I'm probably the most nervous about in all of this, is that we were just speaking on off-air that Qantas has redirected some of its flights away from Iranian airspace. There is an imminent attack on Israel by Iran expected. We know Iran is the funder of Hamas. We know Iran is the funder of Hezbollah. Their proxies in the region have been used to ignite violence, and Iran, or the escalation of this conflict has been, or to avoid escalation has been the number one priority of the President of the United States. Now, obviously, Australia supports that ambition to keep this conflict from escalating. So I want to get to a place where we have a Palestinian state, Macca. I really do. I really do. I want to be there when that peace agreement is signed. But the Middle East, as always, is a very complicated place. And at the moment, it's a very violent place as well.
Josh, it's Paul. There's growing unrest in Israel with the leadership from Netanyahu. And do you think that is also preventing us getting to a ceasefire? What's your position on that?
So obviously I'm a member of the Australian Parliament, and that means that speaking on the domestic politics of another country is something I have to be very careful of. In saying that, it is true to say that prior to October 7, there were huge protests inside Israel, that there was huge angst towards the Netanyahu government about his agenda to change the way in which the judicial and the parliamentary are engaging with one another. That dissipated a bit after the October 7 attack. In my observation, the country became pretty united around dealing with the real security threat that they faced. But then as time has gone on, the pressures that are rising are predominantly around the frustration with the prime minister in not securing the release of hostages, and that the hostages are still in Gaza. Obviously, there are a number of women that Hamas has used sexual violence in their operations, and the you know, if you, as a father or as a family member, I mean, it just kind of makes your stomach drop a bit. So there is I'm observing a growing pressure in that regard. I also think that the Americans are clearly publicly in a bit of conflict with the current Israeli administration, and Australia has to fit in with that dynamic. So it is complicated, Paul, but in saying all of that, Australia's role is to try and prevent escalation, to try and be a good international citizen, to legitimately recognise the rights of the Palestinian people for self-determination, as well as the rights of the Israelis to live within their own homes freely and securely. So that's what we'll continue to do.
Is it fair, or is it to say that this conflict, which has historical roots going back centuries, longer, that if I characterised it as a clash of beliefs, obviously human rights and, you know, where people have lived and now live and where they did live, you know, is a huge factor. But it's I see it as a clash of beliefs. That, and I'm not just talking about faith, that the Palestinians, and I don't want to generalise, have a belief about the land, and the Israelis, again, not wanting to generalise. But that if we want to solve this, there has to be concessions on both sides, clearly.
Absolutely.
Because the positions are immovable. And, you know, I believe in equality. I believe in human rights. Am I taking sides on this? Yes, I'm taking the side of humanity. But the question I'm asking, Josh, is I know you're heavily engaged in this discussion and, you know, the impact that has on you personally and, you know, the difficulty, you know, for your office, and I want to acknowledge, you know, the challenges that are faced and the challenges faced within the government.
Yeah.
But I just for a second want to bring you back to the local environment. The religious freedoms legislation. You played a very big role in defeating the Morrison government's legislation, as did a colleague of yours, Peter Khalil, and a number of crossbenchers. Mm-hmm. So the government has put this back on the shelf. Mark Dreyfus has drafted a bill, which I assume he was ready to present to the parliament. What is the government going to do? Are they going to keep their election promise to protect my community, or are they going to wimp out? What's it going to be?
So for those who are following, last parliamentary sitting, the Prime Minister made it clear that if there are the numbers to pass this, whether it be through the Liberal Party or through the Greens, we will pass this. What he is nervous about is taking the country through a very difficult debate without having an outcome. So I think that there are conversations going on with all sides of politics to try and ensure that there is a pathway. We made a commitment to not only protect people of faith, so whether you're a woman walking down the street wearing a hijab or a man wearing a yarmulke, you shouldn't be discriminated
Correct.
Against.
Yeah.
You shouldn't be screamed at. You shouldn't be vilified. And at the same time, if you're a gay kid at school, you shouldn't be discriminated. You shouldn't be vilified. You need to be protected. And the commitment that we made, including teachers, was to do both of those things, you know, to prevent discrimination from people, whether it be on the basis of your faith, your gender, your sexuality, your race, your religion, whatever it is, you shouldn't be discriminated against. And they were the two outstanding bits of discrimination that we wanted to increase protections against. This debate will get twisted. The bill that the Attorney General has drafted is not the Morrison government bill.
No.
And there is not the swords in it that Morrison had. It is a shield. But this debate will be very difficult for a lot of people. And what the Prime Minister is going through right now is ensuring that if we have the numbers and if we're able to get this thing through the Parliament to protect people from discrimination, then we will do that. He's nervous about going through a difficult debate for no outcome. And I think that's a reasonable place to be. We'll obviously, there are obviously those of us inside the Parliament that want to see this enacted, and will be, you know, are pushing for this to happen. And whether or not we force a vote of someone like Peter Dutton or Adam Bandt to actually stand up for doing the right thing, we'll have to wait and see.
So what's what's your bet if you're a betting man?
Yeah.
Josh
doesn't like
Jenna, I've never bet on any horse, on any casino, any pokey machine. I've never laid a bet in my life. So
neither have I, actually, so to be honest. You know, what do you reckon, you know, are we gonna see that legislation? Is it gonna see the light of day?
The numbers are there.
If the Liberal Party is willing to accept that LGBTIQ kids shouldn't be discriminated against, nor teachers, this thing will pass. Or if the Greens are willing to accept that people in religious garbs shouldn't be discriminated or vilified against, this thing will pass. If one of those two scenarios happen, this thing will pass. We believe both of those things should happen.
Well, I think I agree with you, but I guess I would say that if not the Albanese government,
will have broken our promise.
I don't think it can wait for the next government, because it's now.
We saw how the previous one handled it.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. So it would be, I think, from a lobbying point of view, I think it's incredibly important that it happens and it works and it does the things that you say it should do.
I hope so. I mean, Mark Dreyfus has done a lot of work on this.
Yeah.
And he's consulting with a lot of people, and the LGBTIQ community has been outstanding in their representations, as you would expect.
As have the organisations of faith, I've got to say. That, you know, Mark presented, but we've got to go to the news. You know my view on this.
Yes.
And I say to the government, you've got the numbers, you can do a deal that my community will be happy with, that the faith organisations will be happy with. Don't worry what the opposition think. They don't want to engage with us on this, right? You've got the numbers. 1 and 1 equals 2, add another 1 equals 3, which is a majority, right? You don't need their votes.
We shall see.
Cheers.
Pleasure.
Thanks, Josh.
Always a pleasure. Have a good weekend.
I've been speaking with Josh Burns, the member for McNamara, who can't wait to get out of the studio. Here's the news. Stay with us.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.